I'm prepared to take on significant heat from my party to get something done. And I expect the other side should be willing to do the same thing if they mean what they say, that this is important.
That was President Obama making the case on Monday during a news conference about his plan to raise the $14.3 trillion debt ceiling. His plan would also cut spending and close some tax loopholes. And as NPR's Scott Horsley noted at the top of the hour, no one seems to like it much, if at all. Questions for our listeners. Time to sharpen your pencils. Should we raise the debt ceiling or not? And if not, are you willing to make sacrifices elsewhere instead? Joining us now is Lisa Mascaro. She is a congressional correspondent for the Tribune Washington Bureau, reporting for the Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, and other Tribune newspapers. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Hi, Ann. Thanks for having me.
There are now two proposals on the table. The president's and Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, who yesterday unveiled a backup plan, they're calling it, in case the ongoing negotiations fail to produce a result by the August 2nd deadline. Could you go over those and maybe start with the president's plan?
Yeah, you bet. So we're kind of in this upside-down world that happened yesterday. You know, for months, really all year, it has been Republicans that have been pushing for steep spending cuts in exchange for this, you know, politically difficult vote to raise the debt ceiling. What happened yesterday is that you know, we've seen President Obama over the last couple of days saying, no, I still want to hit this grand deficit reduction bargain. People call it the grand bargain. And it's really based on what a lot of fiscal hawks, the president's own bipartisan fiscal commission last year, came up with this notion that the country really needs to address about $4 trillion in deficit reduction over the next decade if it has any hope of getting out of this cycle of deficit spending and mounting debt. You know, the country's in this situation where the debt has just been rising as a share of GDP, and that's not a good situation. So the president's plan, as he says, you know, he wants a balanced approach. So he's talking about, as he said in the clip that you played at the opening, you know, taking some heat from his side, meaning, you know, being willing to put reductions in the big ticket Democratic items, you know, Medicare, Social Security, and then the vast domestic spending cuts all across the federal government. You know, he's willing to put that on the table in exchange for some give from the Republicans on changing the tax policy. So, you know, there are a couple different
closing those loopholes
on the tax side. Yeah. So, you know, the president's long wanted to end the President Bush era tax rates on the upper income Americans, so those top 2% of American households that are earning more than $200,000 a year for a single or $250,000 for a couple. He wants those rates to go back up to their 39% bracket. But he's even will, you know, he's also talked about these other things, these loopholes, corporate loopholes. You know, people have probably heard about, you know, corporate jet owners get, you know, tax breaks, oil and gas companies get tax breaks. You know, these sort of populist ideas he's trying to appeal to Americans. Mm-hmm. To close these loopholes, get the tax rates, you know, so that the wealthy give a little more. And at the last minute before talks broke down over the weekend, there was even this talk about changing more of the tax code, lowering rates overall for middle-class Americans so that everyone and the wealthy, so everyone has a lower rate. Anyway, that whole tax revenue side of thing is going nowhere because the Republicans are just completely insistent. They have drawn a line in the sand that they are not willing to give on any tax increases. You know, this is a huge issue, a fundamental issue for the Republican Party for a generation, right? No taxes. And so they are not willing to give. The president made this appeal on Monday. He said, we all, you know, eat your peas. You know, we all have to sort of give. And that's really sort of fallen on deaf ears. And so what's happened, because there's only about 10 days left to forge an agreement, even though the deadline isn't until August 2nd, they really need to get an agreement so they can actually start drafting the legislation and circulating it among lawmakers. You know, these things take a few days, you know, have the votes. So, you know, they've set this July 22nd deadline of when they actually want to get something done or an agreement. So. Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the Republican leader of the minority in the Senate, proposed this sort of last-ditch option yesterday which, as I said, sort of turns everything upside down, because what it does is it would allow the president to raise the debt ceiling really without any of these spending cuts that, Republicans have been fighting for the last, 7 months. But what it does it in a very sort of legislatively complex way that would put all of the responsibility on raising the debt ceiling on the president and those who would vote to support it, namely Democrats. So it's a political way to force the Democratic Party and the president to take the heat on this issue. As you know, polls show that Americans don't like the idea of raising the debt ceiling. It's not popular. It's, a time when the country says, we want to cut Washington spending. So this would be a very politically difficult, move, and it would really force Obama to own this issue really well into next year, months before the election. So the way that the Republican leader has laid it out is it would be a series of three debt-ceiling votes. They need about $2.5 trillion in additional debt to get the country through next year to pay its bills. The debt ceiling is now at about $14.3 trillion, so they need an extra $2 trillion. That's sort of the rate that our debts need to be paid off. So to try to jump to the chase here, they would have to do that. The way the Republican leader is proposing it is that Congress would do three different votes, one now, one in fall, and one next summer. And that summer vote would be that would just be a real tough one, because that's right before the election. Right. And, here the president would be out campaigning, and everyone would be saying, oh, he's the guy who raised the debt ceiling and didn't, cut any spending or rein in Washington's excesses. So it's a little upside down situation. And it is, all sides kind of said it's a, we'll kind of set that proposal aside for now and see what they can do. They're back at the White House today. This will be the fourth consecutive day of meetings at the White House between the president and the congressional leaders. They've been meeting for, about 2 hours a day, just hammering through these proposals, trying to see if they can get closer to what the president had wanted, if not this $4 trillion in reduction, something that's about half that, about $2 or $2.5 trillion, that would, again, get votes from Republicans who want spending cuts, but also get votes from Democrats who, are trying to protect these entitlement programs.
My guest is Lisa Mascaro. She is congressional correspondent for the Tribune Washington Bureau. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513. What would you do? Do you want to raise the debt ceiling, or are you willing to make some cuts elsewhere? Because Lisa Mascaro, something's got to give somewhere. The ramifications of not raising the debt ceiling means that, as the president has said, there wouldn't be enough money to cut the checks for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. The president issued this, very sort of stern warning yesterday that said, come August 3rd, the day after, there's not really enough money coming in on a daily basis to the government to pay even Social Security checks. I mean, he threw out that concept that, and the Treasury Secretary has said that, there's about there's about half as much money coming in as is needed to pay the bills. And I think one thing that I don't know people understand, there's a lot of, as I said, opposition in the country to raising the debt ceiling. People say, well, we don't want to spend anymore. I think what's lost on a lot of people that, this is not the credit card. People like to say that this is the mortgage on your house. The federal government has already incurred this debt.
If they don't keep paying on it, then that, just like if you don't pay on your mortgage, it's worse.
Exactly. You can say, well, I'm going to cut up my credit card and not spend anymore. Good for you. That's a great step. That's a great step. Mm-hmm. If you cut up your mortgage, the credit companies will not be pleased. You will be in default. And that's what the financial experts have really and that's what's making Wall Street nervous, is this idea the federal government has never ever in its history defaulted.
There's two things I want to get at before I have to let you go, and I really don't want to let you go, but is going back to the Mitch McConnell plan. Why would the way I've read about it so far is the president would be holding the bag on this one, that even Democrats would benefit from this because no one would really have to. I mean, why would Democrats be damaged, Democrats in general be damaged versus just the president, which is what I'm reading more about. They're saying the whole burden would go to him.
Yeah. Okay.
If we do the incremental increase in the debt ceiling.
Right. Okay. So it does get a little complicated.
Which is way I think they like it sometimes, but.
Yeah. Let me see if I can do that because it is hard to explain. The bill would be a bill to basically show opposition to raising the debt ceiling. So everyone wants to show opposition. Everybody wants to say, well, we don't want to raise the debt ceiling, right?
Okay.
So everyone could vote for that bill. It, in fact, could be a very big bipartisan majority of the Congress saying, yeah, we're opposed to raising the debt ceiling, because even though folks, you know, are trying to act like grown-ups and understand that, well, no, we can't default on the nation's obligations, you know, you still want to say you don't want to raise the debt ceiling because that's the politically sort of popular thing to say right now. Mm-hmm. So people could vote against it. It would pass. This vote of opposition would pass the Congress. Mm-hmm. It would go to the president. And the president would say, I'm vetoing that. So he would veto that bill because he's like, well, no,
okay.
We aren't, you know. And so that would go back to Congress. Congress could try to override his veto, but they probably wouldn't have, you know, a 2/3 people saying, yes, let's raise the debt ceiling. And so it would fail to override. And once it fails, then there's a mechanism for the debt ceiling then to go ahead and be lifted by the amount that was in the bill. So it forces Obama it's like a double negative. It forces Obama to reject their rejection to enable the debt ceiling to happen. So all those Democrats and Republicans can vote no. Obama can override them. His override is
he can veto it.
Veto is the politically, you know, difficult decision for him. He has to. Well, I mean, it's not difficult. Mm-hmm. He would veto it, but
be sustained, and then on we would go.
Well, he would veto it, and then they wouldn't be able to override it, and so they would be able to. Democrats, especially those in tough races who need to show that they are not for this, they would come off looking like they did that, and the president would be the one who had allowed the debt ceiling to be increased. So it really does, the responsibility accrues to him more than them.
Now, something else happened yesterday that I wanted to talk about. A letter from the business community, for lack of a better word, was issued to Congress, I guess, or at least to the negotiators in this case, saying, you know, help for the love of God, don't do this to us. And the business community is the same constituency that put a lot of these fiscally conservative Republicans into office in Congress in the first place.
Well, this is true. It was the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, and they wrote this letter to Congress yesterday. And I think there's a interest in having the business community, step up and make these kind of statements. The business community has also been working to try to educate some of the newer members of Congress and explain to them, you know, about these votes and why they are important. I mean, look, the ramifications here, as the financial experts have said, if the country were to default on its loans, interest rates would go up. A spike in interest rates would lead not just to an increase in the cost that the government has to borrow, but for all across, you know, anyone who's trying to get a loan would suddenly see it. Would people have said it would be financial turmoil, you know, beyond what we saw in 2008 when the financial markets had their upheaval. It really is an unprecedented, you know, people have said catastrophe. So, you know, these business leaders, they believe that too. And they are, you know, they are trying to get folks to, you know, to step up here. You know, there are a number of members of Congress who don't believe that. And they
will continue to
oppose it. They believe that this is all kind of hyped up and, you know, they want to see the spending cuts, and that is their most important issue. And
it's the only issue. I mean, they don't care about anything else.
Well, I mean, they just really feel that that is what they were sent to Washington to do, you know, with the fervor of the, you know, the last election.
Let's just spend one more minute because we're running out of time, but on politics.
Yes.
Lisa Mascaro with the Tribune Washington Bureau. Speaker John Boehner of Ohio and Majority Leader Eric Cantor of Virginia appear to be at odds over this issue. Now, Boehner has capitulated since the weekend. He originally did favor that grand package or grand plan as part of what some people term pragmatic politics. But Eric Cantor, the voice of the staunch conservatives in Congress, is opposed. He's kind of downplayed the conflict a little bit, doesn't want to look like he's, you know, nipping at the boss's heels. How does the politics play into this at this point for Republicans?
Yeah, no, I think you've described that relationship really pretty right on, you know, pretty spot on. You know, there was a comment made in one of the stories we wrote the last couple of days that this is, you know, it's just very difficult for the leaders to control at this point, the Republican leaders to control their rank and file members. Mm-hmm. There's so much passion that came in on the last election, so many members who were new to politics and passionate about their beliefs. And, you know, a lot of them are people who don't care if they stay in Washington. Lawmakers say, if I get kicked out, I don't care. I want to come to Washington and make my spending cuts and go. And that's a really hard group for the Republican leadership to corral and to get them to do what Washington wants and needs them to do.
Okay.
And I think that's exactly what you're seeing, where, you know, Boehner is known as more of a pragmatic deal maker. He's the one who said, you know, President Obama, let's hold hands and jump together and do this big deal. Cantor has always had more of a conservative streak, Majority Leader Cantor, and has, you know, really become a bit of the spokesman of the conservative majority in the House, which really is, for the Republicans, the conservative the Republicans have the majority, and the conservatives are the majority of that majority.
Right.
So, you know, that's,
Lisa Mascaro, thanks for joining us today.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. That's Lisa Mascaro. She's congressional correspondent for the Tribune Washington Bureau, reporting for the Los Angeles Times and the Chicago Tribune. Coming up, we're going to hear from the executive director of the Portage County, Ohio Tea Party. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, Louise Story of the New York Times talks about accountability in the wake of the financial meltdown.
There has been no criminal prosecution of a senior executive from a major bank or financial company related to the financial crisis.
Story examines regulators' softer approach to alleged corporate wrongdoing. Join us.
And Fresh Air begins later today, starting at noon on 89.7 NPR News. 77 degrees in downtown Columbus, sunny skies today, and we'll get up to a high of 82. Clear skies tonight, a low of 57. More sunshine for Thursday, another mild day with a high of 82 degrees.
Support for 89.7 comes from the state auto insurance companies providing home, automobile, and business insurance products and services to Central Ohioans since 1921. State Auto is on the web at stateauto.com.
All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
We're talking about the debt limit. Should it be raised? Is there another solution? Joining us now is Tom Zawitkowski. He is executive director of the Portage County, Ohio Tea Party. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Thanks, Ann, and good morning to you and your listeners in Columbus and on the internet.
All over the place. We're on TV, too, so we're in TV land now. The Republicans yesterday floated a backup plan for raising the debt ceiling in three stages in a way that puts the onus pretty much on the president's shoulders. Republicans certainly benefited from it, but so do Democrats that are in iffy districts where they, you know, that swing a little more conservative. What do you think about Mitch McConnell's proposal?
Well, and, you know, from the Tea Party, you know, patriot movement, you know, we get really frustrated by these type of proposals, because when the president called his meeting on Sunday, they weren't meeting to find out the best solution for the United States. They were meeting to find the best political solution for themselves. And quite frankly, we're not interested in their political situation. We're interested in them doing the job we hire them to do and pay them to do in Washington. And we just don't think they're doing it. And McConnell's proposal to us is just another way to avoid the issues and to avoid taking responsibility.
A letter signed by hundreds of senior company executives and groups, including, well, pretty much came from the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and the Business Roundtable, said that it is critical, and I'm quoting, that the U.S. government not default in any way, end quote, and urges lawmakers to, quote, put aside partisan differences and act in the nation's best interest. What do you think about that? It's been noted in different news articles about that, that these are the same guys, same people who put the folks into Congress that are opposing raising the debt ceiling in the first place?
Well, we have three comments on that. Number one, we think we're the people to put these people in Congress, not big business. Number two, we're suspicious because who's going to get the money? You know, when we raise the debt ceiling and the government spends money, a lot of that flows to General Electric and banks and Wall Street. And so we're not surprised that they would like them to do something. Number three, we are very concerned, and this is a typical Washington trick, and it happened on healthcare. During the healthcare debate, they did a great job of confusing the difference between healthcare and health insurance. The debate about the Obamacare was about getting insurance coverage for people, not healthcare. But the way they changed the wording, everyone thought 30 million people couldn't get healthcare. The same thing is happening here. We're not voting to go into default. We're voting to raise the debt ceiling. Those are two different things. And our point is, we want no one to default on their debt. We just want them to not spend the money. There's two different things there.
But with is any increase? I just want to be real clear. Is any increase in the debt ceiling acceptable at this point to your organization, to the
Absolutely
Tea Party Patriot?
Not.
Okay,
absolutely
not. And the government is expected to collect about $172 billion in revenue and faces about $307 billion in bills in August, according to the Bipartisan Policy Center in Washington. The government then could pay about 55% of its bills in August. So what should be our priorities at that point? Do you have a sense about, you know, I'm asking listeners to sharpen their pencils, too, and tell us, what do they think the priorities should be?
Well, everyone talks about shared sacrifice and all mm-hmm. that. First of all, we don't believe any of those numbers.
Okay.
We've been fed these numbers forever. We're spending $1.7 trillion more than we're taking in. That's the problem. The problem is that we're overspending. If you talk to any debt counselor, and again, we're simple people. We run businesses. We raise our families. You know, we've been in debt. We've had to work ourselves out of debt. Mm-hmm. You talk to any debt counselor in this country, the first thing they will tell you is you're going to cut up your credit cards. That's the first thing they tell you. The problem we have with our federal government, unlike the states, which have to balance their budget, is that they just keep avoiding the problem. And so you get worse and worse. If you don't raise the debt ceiling, then we must have a serious conversation in this country about what we're spending money on and what we can afford. If you raise the debt ceiling, that conversation never takes place.
Failure to pay our bills, according to some, could trigger higher interest rates in the bond market. That's what the businesses are worried about that sent that letter to Congress. That's something, and then that those higher interest rates in the bond market are something that would quickly ripple throughout the economy down to business people, small businesses and all the rest of us, but also would cost the federal government more to borrow the money to pay the bills. And it would be, you can cut up the credit cards all you want, but you still have to pay off the credit card that you have. Right.
Well, mm-hmm. again, common sense, normal people. All right. Mm-hmm. We're looking at this from that viewpoint. Tim Geithner is the CFO of the United States. There is no other United States. We are the big dog, the big economy. Guess what? Our creditors need us more than we need them. Anytime a big company is in trouble, they can restructure their debt. They can negotiate. I'm not hearing anything about that. If Tim Geithner worked for my company, we'd be in conversation with all of our creditors saying, here's the deal. We're not going to borrow any more money. We're going to take this loan. It's a 10-year loan and make it a 15-year loan. You're going to take a haircut on 0.5%, but you're going to negotiate. We're not hearing that. We're hearing our politicians threatening senior citizens and saying, we just won't pay your Social Security. Well, then resign your position because you're not doing your job.
We have an email from Charlotte. She says, I just heard on this morning's news that Senator Mitch McConnell has offered to cede the House of Representatives' responsibility to draft the budget to the president. Since when is it the prerogative of one senator to cede the sworn duty of the House of Representatives to anybody? If I recall correctly, it is the sworn constitutional duty of the House of Representatives to draw up the budget and present it to the Senate for ratification and the president for signing. And I no sooner got my kid sister back for her third tour in this war, and my nephew enlisted in the Navy. They are at their post fulfilling their sworn duty. Where the hell is Congress?
I'm right with her. This is unconstitutional. The Constitution is drawn up. It is the Congress's responsibility to take care of what we spend money on. It is not the executive branch. It's, again, they're ceding their constitutional role. That's cowardice. That's just not what we want. We want leadership. Meet and decide on the best thing for the United States of America. Your political positions mean nothing to us, and we'll be happy to replace you if you aren't ready to provide the leadership we need.
From Jennifer on Facebook, she has an idea on what to do. She says, should we raise the debt ceiling? No and yes. We have room to cut our defense budget and entitlement programs. We need to reexamine how we spend because to do otherwise would be foolish. Raise the retirement age, cut Social Security disability, withdraw our troops from Iraq and Afghanistan and the other 117 countries we're stationed in. That's a good start. So, you know, everyone knows that the root problem is that the government spends more than it takes in, as you said, Tom. The wars and the aging population are chief among probably several factors behind this. Where should spending be cut to address this?
Well, I think absolutely the extension of the retirement age, it's a given. I mean, you know, we're living longer than ever, and we're also healthier and can work longer. So, I mean, I think they underestimate the American people. We live in the real world. We understand dollars and cents. We know when gas prices go up, how much it hurts us, or when food prices go up. Just have an honest conversation with us. The approval ratings of Congress are what, like 12% or 16%? And the president is double that, 35 or something? Folks, that's the problem. We don't trust you. You don't tell us the truth. You're spinning everything because you're trying to protect your interests instead of ours, or the people that provide you the money to run for office instead of ours. Instead of protecting Wall Street, who is representing the American people today in Congress?
What about the tax loopholes issue? How do you feel about that?
Absolutely should be closed. This is the problem with the tax code. The tax code is totally dishonest. The code isn't about who pays taxes. It's about who doesn't. It's just wrong. That's why we believe in a flat tax or a fair tax. I just think because you need something that can't be manipulated. They manipulate the economy for their political gain. It's wrong. It's against the American people.
Tim in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, as usual. Thank you for your time. Have a question for the gentleman. I'm wondering if he owns any property such as a home, and if so, if that home or property is totally paid for.
I do own property, both a rental and commercial, and a home, and no, they are not paid for.
Okay, well, based upon what you're saying in terms of a simple explanation, then I would see that you are in a deficit spending mode. Is that
I have assets, and I can pay. You know, I can pay for those properties out of my income.
So if I asked you today to pay off your note, you could do that.
If I had to pay off a note, yes, I could.
You could pay for all your property today if I asked you to do that.
We're not saying you have to do that.
Okay, my point is that's what the government does. The government spends money, and then they hope to get money in. So you talked about a very basic kind of simple explanation, but I'm saying that what you're saying isn't accurate. The government is not in a position to pay as it goes, as the same way that you are not, and the same way that I'm not.
Well, I am in a position to pay as I go.
No, you just told me that you couldn't pay it off today.
No. There's a difference in what you're saying. We're not saying the government has to pay off all their liabilities. What we're saying is they can't even make the monthly payments. If my bank looks at my financials annually and my income is down so low that I cannot pay that, they will call the loan. And that's the problem. No one calls the government's loan. They just come to us and take more of our money. You're comparing apples to oranges.
Tim, I wanted to ask you, what do you think about the idea that Tom had about why can't the federal government negotiate some of these payments a business might if times are hard?
Well, I would agree that the government shouldn't pay anything more than they need to. But to make it sound like it's such a simple thing is not being genuine. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other question I would have, and going back to the same thing, I'm assuming that you take tax breaks on your properties, such as like a home mortgage interest deduction?
I take what the law provides me.
Okay, well, that's fine. But you talked about these loopholes and so forth. You can't really call something loopholes and what you and I are doing not.
That's why we are for a flat tax.
That's not being an honest broker.
All right, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Tom?
Yeah, that's why we are for a flat tax. Okay. I don't think you should get a mortgage deduction. I don't think you should get anything, any kind of a deduction. You should pay the tax that you should pay, whether you're a corporation or an individual. But that's not what happens. And so, yes, the mortgage deduction is a special interest and is a loophole. The question is, why, and does it serve our needs?
Delbert in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Yes, I would like to ask the gentleman, how could 75% of any business deal be bad for him if they have $4 million to work with, or $4 million in reduction? And the president is willing to let the Democrats, willing to cut taxes to $3 million, willing to cut the spending by $3 million, and ask the Republicans to do $1 million.
You're talking trillion. Delbert, wait a minute.
Trillions.
Okay, just checking.
How could that be a bad business deal? How would any businessman think of that as a bad deal?
Well, the question is, can you pay it off? I mean, the question is, think about this. This is the other part of the puzzle that we just don't understand. Even the Paul Ryan plan never touches the debt. It only, his balanced budget plan that everyone's so critical of goes until like 2024, raises our debt to $20 trillion and quote unquote balances our budget where we're only spending what we take in, but we have a $20 trillion debt. No one's talking about even cutting any of our debt in any of these negotiations. If you're a financial counselor, that's a really troubling thing.
Delbert, thanks for your call. We appreciate it. We have a few more minutes with our guest, Tom Zawitkowski. He is executive director of the Portage County, Ohio Tea Party. Questions or comments, you can also email us if you'd like at allsides@wosu.org. You can go on Facebook, of course, as Jennifer did, the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and you can call us at 614-292-8513 or email us again at allsides@wosu.org. Doug, you're on the east side. Oops. Doug, you're on the east side, and we welcome you to the show. Thanks.
Yes, hi. I've basically been a Democrat all my life. I'm in my 60s. And but the numbers we're staring at right now makes me very sympathetic to the Tea Party candidates. They're incredibly outrageous amounts of debt. We're borrowing 45% of what we're spending, and that can't go on. But when you look at the numbers, the three places they really have to take a hit, of course, is Medicare, Social Security, and defense. And even if you cut those like 20 or 30%, it still doesn't come close.
Drop in the bucket.
Yes. And so then you start looking at tax revenue increases, and it takes large tax revenue increases to bring us up to the level that we need just to pay our yearly bills, let alone start paying down the budget or the debt we have. And what bothers me, I kind of like the way the Tea Party is going on these economic issues, but then every time they bring up a candidate that talks about things like that, they go off to what I think is the deep end on social issues, like Michelle Bachmann's latest snafu in the paper and things like that. And so what I'm looking for out of the Republicans is somebody who is more moderate on the social issues, but conservative on the physical issue.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Doug, that's a great comment. That's the one thing that's important to understand about the Tea Party. We really try to stick to fiscal issues. There's a lot of us in the Tea Party movement that have very strong social issues, but we do not, work on those issues. We kind of believe that if we can get our economic house in order, the social issues will take care of themselves. This is not the time for that. We need to focus like a laser beam. If you're not afraid of the debt we have, you're just making a huge mistake. Think about your own personal self, and if you were borrowing 45% of what you spent every day, how terrified would you be personally about your own position? That's what we're doing. And so the pain, there's going to be pain. I was on a conference call yesterday with one of our freshman congressmen, And he was talking about how it doesn't matter how this goes, there's going to be a lot of people upset and hurt. And I said, you know what, Bill? That's a great opportunity, because if there's no political calculus that can make it easy on you guys, just do what's right for the country. And what's right for the country is whatever pain we're going to have, we'd rather take it now, because it's only going to be bigger pain in 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years.
Tom Zawodkowski, thank you for joining us today.
And it was my pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Tom Zawodkowski, he's executive director of the Portage County, Ohio Tea Party. Coming up, we'll hear from the Center for American Progress. It's an organization that supports raising the debt ceiling. Stay with us. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Join WOSU Public Media for a Chefs in the City coffee brunch at the elegant Deepwood Restaurant. The event is Saturday, July 23rd at 10:30 a.m., and tickets are on sale now for $45 each. A handcrafted seasonal brunch will be presented by Chefs Brian Pollock and Amber Heron of Deepwood. Guests will also learn to make excellent coffee at home with Andy Luck of Luck Brothers Coffee House. Tickets are limited. Visit WOSU.org/chefs to reserve yours now.
And this is 89.7 NPR News. In 20 minutes at 11 o'clock, Hour 2 of All Sides begins with an update on the Rise Sister Rise Project, which studies how urban African-American girls experience the world. That discussion begins at 11.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Ohio Craft Museum, presenting Boxes and Their Makers, an exhibition of wooden boxes by contemporary artists from around the world, on view at the Ohio Craft Museum through August 21st. Details at ohiocraft.org.
77 degrees with partly sunny skies will reach a high of 82 today. Clear skies tonight, a low of 57. More sunshine for Thursday, another nice day with a high of 82. Clear skies Thursday night, a low of 63. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is 89.7 NPR News. Thanks for joining us.
We're talking about the debt limit. Is there a solution? Should we raise it? Should we hunker down and live without it? Joining us now is Michael Ettlinger. He's vice president for economic policy at the Center for American Progress. It's an organization that supports raising the debt ceiling. Well, welcome to the show, Michael.
Nice to be with you.
After 3 days of talks, the president and Republicans seem no closer, in fact, farther away than ever, to a workable compromise on his proposal. Republicans have offered that backup plan for raising the debt limit by placing the entire burden for raising the ceiling, debt ceiling, on President Obama. What do you make of that?
Well, you know, I think President Obama has broad shoulders and could take that burden. I do think it's a bit of an abdication of responsibility by the Republicans in the proposal, in the sense that they kind of don't want to get their hands dirty with it, but they know it has to be done. So it's a political maneuver for them. They get done what has to be done. They don't get blamed for crashing the economy by letting the debt limit, get breached. But then they don't get their hands dirty with it.
Our last guest, Tom Zawodkowski, he's executive director of the Portage County, Ohio Tea Party. He said that they're not talking about, they don't believe that this is an issue of whether or not we're going to go into default, that it's just not that big of a deal, that we could, the government could negotiate its way out of a default position.
That's insane. It's just not true. If you look at simply, the obligations of the government, all the bills that the government gets every day, and they only to be able to pay out on cash on hand those bills, there is no question that day to day we would constantly be having the federal government's checks bounce. And, that is a completely untenable situation. It would crash the economy. It would destroy the, faith and credit of the United States government. I mean, it would be an unmitigated disaster. And I really, I think there's a reason why you see a proposal by Mitch McConnell, who is, no fan of government spending, but he realizes that it would be a disaster to let this happen, and he doesn't want that on his hands or his conscience.
Would it be? I've been wondering about the how effective it would be to do it incrementally as they're proposing in the McConnell plan. Why would we go to the extent that the president is suggesting when we could do it incrementally and still keep our head above water?
Well, there's sort of no reason to do it incrementally. You might as well do the whole thing that you're going to need for, you know, some reasonable length of time. The only reason they're proposing the incremental approach is so that it's purely political on the part of the Republicans. They just want to make the president, you know, be in the newspaper multiple times, and Democrats be in the newspaper multiple times, sort of getting even, you know, blamed for the debt limit increases. When in fact, you know, these Republicans, many of them, certainly in the House, you know, voted for the budget that is necessitating the debt limit increases. So it's just political games.
Pete in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hi.
Hi,
can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you very well.
Well, what I wanted to say was it seemed to me that one of the problems with all these unfunded liabilities is that we have a lot of people who just don't care. The very people who receive these benefits don't seem to care. They're on the lower echelon, the lower strata of society. So they just go out and drink beer and have fun, and they don't really give a darn what happens to Uncle Sam up above. We need to get people more involved in our society. And it seemed to me that government is a little bit irresponsible, has been irresponsible. But I agree with the professor. We cannot devolve. We cannot permit interest rates to rise. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Pete, for that call. Is it just the people that would receive the entitlements that would be hurt by this if the debt ceiling isn't raised?
No, absolutely not. I mean, and I'm not sure how much fun it is to be poor. But leaving that aside, absolutely not. And I mean, if the debt ceiling isn't raised, it's going to hurt everybody. I mean, that's sort of unequivocal. I mean, we all rely on the economy. Economy crashes, we're all hurt. I think, you know, the question is whether the spending cuts that have been proposed would reach beyond low income people, and they absolutely would, because, you know, poverty programs are really quite a small portion of the budget, relatively speaking, and, you know, the Medicare, Social Security, defense spending, the FAA, I mean, all these things that together constitute the bulk of what we spend money on are really to the benefit mainly of of the middle class and all of us.
Patricia in Canal Winchester, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hello.
Hi, Patricia.
Hi. I would like to know what in the world is wrong with the Republican Party's arithmetic.
Can you be more specific?
Sure. They complain about Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid all the time. They want to cut this, they have to do this, they have to do the other. Okay? If they're so concerned about the budget, why don't they cut their own salary? We don't have to pay for their insurance. We don't have to pay for their dental insurance. Let them carry that bulk on their own. And why in the world should the taxpayer have to pay them after they've been in office 4 years? Why should the taxpayer have to give them a pension that's equivalent to the same amount of money that they was getting when they was working for four thousand years?
Okay.
Nobody else gets that.
Okay. Patricia, thanks for your call. So, the earlier caller, Michael, suggested that people aren't engaged. But this issue, which they've raised the debt ceiling many times before and nobody's ever blinked an eye, but for some reason people are very interested in it now. It has to do with the politics in Washington. Good or bad, ultimately?
Look, I don't think we should be playing games with the debt ceiling. There's the proper place to deal with these spending and tax and budget issues is in the context of doing the budget, which is where we incur the obligations which necessitate us borrowing money. And, you know, I do think there's a long-term deficit plan, the problem, and we ought to be dealing with it. But playing games with the debt limit is just, it's a big mistake. You know, we didn't have a debt limit up until the beginning part of the last century. it was sort of an artifact of history. No other country has a separate debt limit. We have a budget process that is where we should be fighting these fights. And they're important fights, and there's two sides to it, and there are multiple sides to it, and that's all fair enough. We just shouldn't be doing it in the context of the debt limit, which really does threaten the trust that people around the world put in the U.S. economy, which is a very valuable asset to us and one that, you know, has great value to us that we shouldn't underestimate.
The history of the debt and the debt limit is interesting. It zoomed up during the Reagan-Bush era. It went up a little higher during the Clinton era. Then he brought it back down again. Then it zoomed back up again during the next Bush era. And it's, of course, at 100% right now, right?
Well, no, debt is a share. Publicly held debt is a share. GDP is not
okay.
Near 100%.
Okay.
It's in the six. I think it's in the low 60s now. But, I mean, it's too high. But you know what? Actually, it's not too high in this sense. I mean, it's a manageable number right now. During a recession, and a weak economy like we face now, it's appropriate to be running up debt. The real problem is that the projections for 5, 10, 15 years from now, you know, the realistic projections show that we don't start reducing the debt during when the economy is on more solid footing, and that's a real threat, and that's what we need to be focused on.
We have a couple emails from folks who support raising taxes. One is an email from Bill. He says, "What are people willing to give up if all we do is close the budget gap? I support paying higher taxes to bring our debt down, along with cuts to reduce expenditures. The extension of the Bush tax cuts is a joke in that I'm a government employee and don't pay Social Security tax, hence my taxes went up with the extension. At the end of the day, it's all smoke and mirrors." And then an email from Tim. "When was the last time taxes went up? Taxes are as low as they were in the 1950s. When my household costs go up, I can't pass the cost along. Business can eat some extra costs like the rest of us." I guess it's the tax rates are pretty low compared to the last 30 or 40 years.
I mean, we are collecting the lowest amount of revenue as a share of our economy since the 1950s. And, you know, it's not sustainable. You know, we had these big tax cuts under President Bush, and then that sort of ran up against the weak economy, and you ended up with, you know, historically low levels of revenue. And that's really the biggest factor in the high deficits we're running now, is our low revenue. I mean, you know, remember last time tax collections were this low, we didn't have Medicare. We Social Security benefits were much lower. We had a younger population. We had not started our big Cold War era defense spending, so defense spending was much, much lower. There are a whole host of things that we didn't do in this country that we think are valuable. And so, you know, we could get rid of those things at great cost to our society and our well-being, or we can pay some higher taxes. And, you know, I think taxes just should be part of the mix here.
Talking about the debt limit, should the debt ceiling be raised? Is there a solution? Joining us, Michael Ettlinger. He's Vice President for Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress. And they support raising the debt ceiling. Paul and Bexley are on the air. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. One thing I want to point out is that, you know, Social Security certainly should be considered but I think it should be a separate issue. It's not part of the current situation, and to throw it in and keep referring to it, I think just kind of muddies the water even more. And I think, Ann, you did a minute ago, you brought up an important point that most of the debt in the last 30 years or so with Reagan and the Bushes is most of the debt. Clinton did a good job of knocking it down, and then Bush 2 comes in and knocks it up again. We get the two wars, and we don't pay for them. And our percentage of debt to GDP is significantly less than a lot of other major countries that are, you know, like Japan, that are in decent shape. And it's just, you know, we keep moving the ball here. Moving the point of
when you're Paul, when you're talking about Social Security, you're talking about the president's threats that the Social Security checks won't be in the mail in August if we don't.
No, not that, because they borrowed from the fund to be able to use the money because they need that
right.
actual
okay.
cash. But as far as it paying for itself, you know, it's IOUs from the government to pay it back. So there is an issue, and we certainly consider reform. I'd probably be smacked around by some other Democrats for that suggestion. But, you know, it's not part of the issue right now as far as the debt ceiling, okay, the deficit as we're looking at it now. And, you know, I love it how the Republicans, when they're in, they run up the debt like crazy. Then the Democrats get stuck with the problem, and then it's always the Democrats' fault. You know, it's especially like I made this point earlier, too, when I called in before about, you know, here we've got these two wars that have gone on for, 10 years almost, and we haven't paid for them. That's how, you know, that certainly was a big dent in the credit card. And then if we eliminate those tax cuts, that would go far to bring the deficit back into something much closer that we could have control over.
Okay. Paul, thank you. Michael Ettlinger, any response to that?
Well, I guess a couple things. I mean, one thing is, you know, actually we have lower taxes as a share of our economy, counting all levels of taxation, state, local, federal, than almost every economically advanced country in the world. So that's true. On Social Security, I think he's right. There is a problem in the long-term solvency of Social Security, and we at the Center for American Progress actually have a plan to deal with that, and we have gotten beaten up by Democrats, so I empathize with the caller. But I think Social Security is not the reason we're running deficits or the reason for our long-term deficit problems. And he's right. You know, if you let all of the Bush tax cuts expire, not just the ones on the wealthy, we hardly even have a long-term deficit problem. It's really, you know, we have deficits, but they're very manageable and at levels that are within the historic norm. I don't think anyone's put on the table seriously letting them all expire, but letting them expire on the wealthy would certainly be a big help to us fiscally. And I'd point out that would bring us up to Clinton-era rates or close to them when the economy did very well. So we kind of know what we get with that tax structure.
Michael Ettlinger, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. That's Michael Ettlinger. He's Vice President for Economic Policy at the Center for American Progress. And thank you for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.